Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He joins us every Thursday at this time, and we thank him for same. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noah. Glad to have you back. Hope you had a great vacation.
I certainly did. We had a great time. Rafi, you guys, because of the Hurricane Francine, had to reschedule the MCC Annual Awards Luncheon, and the new date, I believe, is November 7th, 2024, at the Sheraton New Orleans Hotel. But there's a new offer that's out there as a result of this. Tell us about it.
Right. So we were disappointed to have to postpone the meeting. But one of our donors said, listen, let's try and turn these lemons into lemonade. We got an extra couple of weeks. So they've offered us $15,000 as a challenge match. So anybody that buys a ticket, makes a donation, or sponsors the event, their gift will be matched dollar for dollar up to $15,000 for us. And, you know, this event really funds our operation, so it's critically important to keep us viable and strong to have financial support. So this is an opportunity that if you haven't already purchased a ticket or subscribed to a sponsorship, you can do it online, metrocrime.org. And any donations, gifts, or sponsorships will be matched dollar for dollar up to $15,000 for us between now and the meeting on November the 7th.
And fortunately, all the keynote speakers have reconfirmed Governor Jeff Landry, Jefferson Parish Sheriff Joe LoPinto, Orleans Parish DA Jason Williams, as well as the FBI New Orleans Special Agent in Charge, Lionel Myrtle, which is good because it's hard to get that group together, and their reconfirmation is obviously a positive.
No, I guarantee you, if you come, you'll be entertained, it'll be informative, and it'll be inspiring. So please consider joining us on November the 7th.
Absolutely, and we will be broadcasting live. The Newell Norman Show will be there. We'll be broadcasting live, and we'll have an opportunity to talk to a lot of these folks and spend a little bit more time and in kind of an informal fashion. And I know Rafi will visit with you as well, and we're looking forward to it.
Us too. Thank you for your support and helping us get the message out about this event that's important to us.
So, Rafi, juvenile ankle monitoring seems to be in the headlines yet again. And this is kind of frustrating, right? I mean, and you've seen this unfold so many times. I mean, I guess you just kind of shake your head at this point in time. We just can't seem to get it right.
Right. You know, so I think we're doing a lot of positive things with respect to ankle monitoring. But the positives haven't been applied yet to the juvenile justice system. So a week ago Monday, there was a murder of a 15-year-old in the 7th District. That was the first homicide in the 7th District in 55 days. We've been tracking this since 2019. The 7th District has never gone 55 days without a homicide. But you know, on a week ago Monday, October the 7th, a 15-year-old was murdered at about 8:45, and a few days after his murder, it was revealed that he was wearing an ankle monitor. So the questions, you know, arise, how did this happen? Was he under some type of court order to not be out at that time? And we don't know definitively yet. So I know that your station, a lot of other people in the media, you know, are talking about this, and rightfully so. You and I have been talking about it for years and years. We've gone through some highs and unfortunately a lot of lows. And one of the things that's been discussed recently is the fact that a new law went into effect or was passed during this past session. It goes into effect in January of 2025. And, you know, what is being talked about is that this will create some statewide uniform rules governing mandatory requirements for electronic monitoring service providers and manufacturers. That'll be a good thing. But we're already doing it the right way in New Orleans for adult offenders. We're just not doing it for juvenile offenders. So this law is, I think, you know, a testament to the hard work of the service provider in this city, ASAP, Matt and Jill Dennis, that have started this business, and they have, I believe, set the bar as to how electronic monitoring should be done. But unfortunately, they're only doing electronic monitoring on adult offenders. And what we're seeing is the examples of how electronic monitoring cannot and will not provide the results that people expect, what the technology is capable of, if it is not properly applied. And we're seeing it not properly applied and utilized in the juvenile arena. And those offenders, some, you know, in this particular case, we're talking about, you know, a young man, a 15-year-old wearing a monitor. He was a murder victim. We've seen other examples of 15 and 16-year-olds being the perpetrators of crimes while wearing an ankle monitor. So this law that goes into effect next year, which is already essentially the way that Matt Dennis and Jill Dennis are operating their electronic monitoring company in New Orleans, doesn't become a statewide law until January of next year, and it will apply to every entity, even the juvenile courts. So why do we have to wait till next January to get this right when we're already doing it right in the city with some of the with one of the service providers? Why aren't we using that firm to do the work in juvenile offenders? So in looking at the case involving, you know, the 15-year-old that was murdered, he was murdered at 8:45. According to the media reports, he was under an order by the court to abide by the New Orleans juvenile curfew rules, which means that not allowed to be out of his house after 9 p.m., meaning that he was murdered 15 minutes before he would have been in violation of that. So having that condition, he wasn't in violation of any conditions of his release when he was actually right. murdered. But it raises the question, if this is an offender that was charged and had open charges, why is he allowed to stay out till 9 p.m.? Wearing a monitor is a privilege, not a right. And if this is a young man that had difficulty in complying with the law, why not put him on house arrest or impose a curfew, allowing him out of the house only to attend school, go to work, or attend some type of treatment or counseling services? So, but that's on the judge or judges that, you know, made that rule. But electronic monitoring works. And this law, I think, is an important first step, but I think that it doesn't quite go far enough. And by that, I'm talking about the law requires that the equipment be working, that there be real-time monitoring, and that judges or Department of Corrections or Office of Juvenile Justice officials have to impose some specific conditions for pretrial or post-conviction release. And it requires that if an offender violates their conditions of release, the monitoring company has to notify that agency within 24 hours. Quite frankly, that's too late in many instances. There needs to be real-time monitoring, and there needs to be real-time enforcement. And the law doesn't provide for that yet, even though in New Orleans, Matt and Jill Dennis's firm do that. So when they see an offender that's perpetrated an offense, they immediately notify the court, but they immediately begin to attempt to rectify the situation and take that person into custody for meaningful and significant violations of conditions of release, i.e. things like trying to cut the monitor off, entering an exclusion zone where someone may have been told to stay away from a victim or a witness. They enter that area, they notify the court, but they also immediately go out and attempt to take that person into custody or redirect them out of those exclusion zones. That's the capabilities of this technology, and unless and until it's harnessed properly, there are going to be tragedies like what we saw happen with this 15-year-old. And sometimes it won't be a 15-year-old victim. It'll be a 15-year-old that is perpetrator of a crime that has ultimately, you know, cost someone their life, and we've seen that happen as recently as earlier this summer, where a 15-year-old wearing a monitor murdered the tour guide in the French Quarter, and that was in the middle of the night. And again, no real-time monitoring, no real consequences, and there has to be some real-time meaningful responses to violations of conditions of release. The other thing that's lacking in the law, in my opinion, is that everybody that is on a monitor, in addition to any specific conditions that are imposed by the court or the state, also is ordered not to commit any other crimes. And this technology is based on global positioning. So everybody wearing a monitor, you can determine where they are at any given time. And what Matt and Jill Dennis is doing with their firm, they're allowing law enforcement to access everybody wearing a monitor. So anytime there is a major offense committed in the city of New Orleans, the police department geomaps every major offense. And ASAP and Matt and Jill Dennis's firm allow law enforcement unrestricted access to their database to determine if anyone wearing a monitor was at the scene of a crime when a crime was perpetrated. And that tool has been helpful to law enforcement in identifying suspects that the police were able to link to some of the crimes of violence that occurred and resulted in the arrest of offenders for serious crimes of violence and other felony offenses. So the new law does some wonderful things, creating some statewide parameters, doesn't go quite far enough, and I think there's the opportunity to fix it going forward. But unless and until we do, and unless those rules are applied to juvenile offenders, we're going to continue to see tragedies play out like we just talked about.
Why this is not going to be implemented before January 1st is I think that there's a complete total lack of having an insatiable thirst to want to know. You know, these juvenile offenders, you want to know things about what they're doing. I just don't see that approach. I don't see that attitude. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. Another indictment that has come forward, Randy Farrell. A lot of information in that indictment going back to the mayor. Talk to us about it.
Right. So back in July, we saw where the mayor's bodyguard, Officer Jeffrey Vappi, now retired Officer Jeffrey Vappi, was indicted on counts of wire fraud, which is essentially payroll fraud for him, and also lying to the FBI. But one of the most illuminating aspects of that indictment was the government referencing the fact that they were approving and citing some of examples of his personal dealings with the mayor while he was on the clock for the city using his cell phone. And in that indictment, it was made abundantly clear that the government not only has Officer Vappi's cell phone, but the mayor's cell phone. And fast forward to last week, we saw that Randy Farrell, a city inspector, a third-party inspector, was indicted for, among other things, honest services fraud in bribing the mayor and also fraudulently submitting falsified inspections to the city of New Orleans. But with respect to his corruption indictment for bribing the mayor, the government referenced cell phone messages that were transmitted from Randy Farrell to Businessman One, who was the intermediary that was conveying Randy Farrell's, allegedly conveying Randy Farrell's offers of inducements for the mayor to fire a building management supervisor that was giving him trouble. So the mayor ultimately fired Jennifer Cecil, who is the deputy director of safety and permits in One Stop, who was on to Farrell's scheme, and he wanted her removed. And he offered inducements to the mayor via Businessman One. Those conversations and messages were captured from the cell phone messages of Farrell, Businessman One, and they reference responses from Public Official One, which everybody knows is the mayor. So if the mayor is using her cell phone to communicate with Officer Vappi, it is an indication that she believed her cell phone was in fact safe and secure. So in indicting the person that allegedly bribed the mayor, the government references his cell phone records and communications with the mayor. I think it's abundantly clear that the government has the mayor's cell phone records. And this case is not built on just the testimonial evidence of Businessman One or any other people. It's built on the communications between the briber and the bribee, the person that accepted the bribe, back and forth. So the mayor has not been indicted, but you don't indict somebody for bribing a public official if you don't intend to indict the public official that accepted the bribe. And I think that the Farrell indictment is just the next shoe to drop, the next rung on the ladder, and that ultimately, as prosecutors work their way up the ladder, the mayor will be indicted. It's not a question of if, in my opinion. It's a matter of when, and I believe the case is being constructed on a lot of the cell phone records that the government has obtained of the mayor and the people that were attempting to influence her and offer her financial gifts and inducements to affect her official duties as mayor. And apparently Farrell was successful in offering the mayor enough to get her to fire a city official that was only doing her job and was giving him trouble because she recognized that he was fraudulently submitting inspection forms to the city.
So obviously we now have this cross-pollinization that's going on of multiple cases, all coming back to cell phones, text messages, and some of these messages are pretty damning and revealing. They're just right out in front about what they were doing, right?
Absolutely. And I've had some people say, well, you know, the mayor is going to jeopardize her career for some tickets to a football game and for a new cell phone and for a steakhouse dinner. And, you know, my response to that is that, the government is required to prove that the mayor used her official powers as the chief executive to hiring and firing based on the gifts that were awarded to her. The fact that, you know, you or I or another person may not have risked their career for what she did, that's of no moment. The question is, did she accept remuneration and gifts to influence her official duties? And the government is alleging that they have proof that Randy Farrell bribed the mayor. And I think that the amount of money or the amount of the gifts isn't really relevant. What is relevant is that she accepted the gifts and she used her authority as mayor to remove an official that had done nothing wrong other than her job, and that is to enforce the inspection rules for the city of New Orleans. And when she began to question Randy Farrell for his inspections that weren't being conducted by licensed electricians, it cost her her job. And Randy Farrell bought the mayor at a bargain basement price, but that was her decision to sell herself and her office for the gifts that she accepted.
And it's not the first time, right? Because we have the situation that presented itself relative to the superintendent of police, the interim superintendent of police, where she embraced the investigation of Jeffrey Vapi, and the next thing you know, the story's being told that she suffered the consequences of that action by the mayor bypassing her and naming Ann Kirkpatrick.
Right, right.
And talking about Woodfork.
Exactly. So, you know, what you're seeing is, you know, the mayor using her position as mayor for her own personal benefits. And, you know, it's one thing, you know, for a public official to maybe, accept something. Under Louisiana law, you can receive gifts of, I think, $50 or less. But when the mayor receives thousands of dollars worth of tickets to football games, a $1,400 cell phone, an $800 steak luncheon with some of her friends that are paid for by someone that, according to the email or the text messages back and forth, is that once the mayor fired Jennifer Cecil, Farrell's response to the businessmen was that, well, she's a person of her word, you know, and I'll continue to support her. So, again, the government has the burden of proof. They know what's required under the law. And the fact that they have now indicted the person that bribed the mayor is, I think, an indication that the mayor's day of reckoning is fast approaching.
So let's pivot to another case, you know, this outsourcing of an investigation to Transcendent Law Group by the Public Integrity Bureau. Ambrose's attorney, Justin Schmidt, sent them a letter saying, you know, where are we on this investigation? You've had this thing since the beginning of the summer. How much longer is this going to take? I mean, this is, seems as though we're playing the delay game in order to benefit someone. We know that they're having conversations with the city attorney, which I don't know if that's copacetic or not. You can't be independent if you're communicating with the mayor's representative, right? So right. Here we are again. A lot of what was in the consent decree issues about the conduct of these internal investigations seem to be getting compromised all over again.
Well, exactly. So, again, the common denominator with, you know, the Vappy case, with the Randy Farrell case, and now with this Bro case, is the mayor. The mayor's involved and at the heart of all of these. So in this particular case, as you know, your audience will recall, in April, Ann Bro, private citizen, walked out on her balcony and saw the mayor and her bodyguard, Officer Jeffrey Vappy, dining on the balcony of Tableau Restaurant. And she took a picture, gave that picture to the Crime Commission. We filed a complaint with Public Integrity. And that investigation was farmed out to a private law firm because there was a conflict with the police department investigating the mayor's bodyguard, and potentially the mayor would be asked to give a statement, which he refused to cooperate or do. But in any event, it was sent to a private law firm. And then after we filed that complaint with PIB, the mayor decided to go into civil court seeking a protective order from Ann Bro from following her around. And when she filed that protective order, she submitted filings in the court that included the driver's license photo of Ann Bro, included Ann Bro's Social Security number, and also referenced a criminal history that's only available to law enforcement. All of those are not available to the public, yet the mayor had them in her civil filings. Her civil filings for the protective order were summarily dismissed in civil court in July. And what ended up happening is the judge said that the mayor's allegations were totally baseless and ordered all court costs to be paid by the mayor in connection with that, as well as the legal fees of Ann Bro. Now, Ann Bro, because she couldn't find out how the mayor obtained all of that privileged information through her attorney, filed a lawsuit in federal court, alleging her civil rights were violated by the mayor and the police department. And Ann Bro's attorney filed a complaint with Internal Affairs as to how did the mayor obtain these records. PIB recused themselves from the case, and the case went to the private law firm, the Transcendent Law Firm. And that complaint has been lingering in that law firm for 92 days. And Justin Schmidt, Ann Bro's attorney, in a letter that he wrote to the law firm asking them what's the status of this investigation that's been going on, cites the fact that he was provided with some text communications or emails between the attorney conducting the investigation and one of the senior partners in the law firm, where the senior partner is talking about, well, this case is taking as long as it is because of some gamesmanship and politics between the city attorney's office and potentially that law firm. So he's talking about that and saying, we want a conclusion to this thing. And also yesterday, the mayor, in an attempt to further delay the civil lawsuit that's pending, had gone into court and requested that the matter be stayed because she's under investigation. And yesterday, the federal court ruled denying the mayor and the city of New Orleans' request to stay Ambrose's civil rights case. And the court concluded that there was no basis to stay this case because the mayor is not a named defendant in any criminal cases. Officer Vappi is not a named defendant in the civil rights case that Ambrose is pursuing in federal court. So there was no justification to stay the case. So as we speak right now, the mayor is now susceptible to being subpoenaed, deposed, and questioned about how she obtained the records. And the city was doing everything in their power to prevent that from happening. But they lost in court yesterday. And Ambrose's attorney is waiting for the civil firm to complete their investigation to determine how those officers were engaged in a civil case that the mayor was pursuing, and what, if any, records did the police department provide to the mayor that were not public records. Those were records that were available exclusively to law enforcement, but somehow the mayor came into possession of those records. So those are the balls that are being juggled right now. But everything that we've talked about in this segment, the common denominator, whether it's the Officer Vappi indictment, the Randy Farrell indictment, or the civil rights case, they all turn back to the mayor of the city of New Orleans, LaToya Cantrell.
Rafi, is there the possibility that this ends up being an issue in this sustainment period of the consent decree? Because this seems to go right to the heart of the matter of the quality and the efficacy of the PIB investigations that are being conducted. They provide a remedy because of a conflict, but now we're finding out that there are emails going back and forth to the city attorney. We had a similar situation in one of the other PIB investigations where, you know, the city attorney's involved, and we had this accidental or intentional, I don't know which, release of information. It all sounds familiar. I wish bad on them, and I'm glad they got out of it. But, I mean, this mayor could be causing a whole nother host of issues and taxpayer money being spent for what? I mean, you know, it's ridiculous.
Right. So, again, you know, using her official office and the powers of her office, not for official city purposes, but for her own best interests in all of this. So in this civil case, if the plaintiffs, Ann Brough and her attorney, prove this, they're going to receive a judgment from the city of New Orleans, and it could be quite substantial. And, you know, the city is going to be using taxpayer dollars to settle this case. And while they're defending it right now, the taxpayers are paying for the defense to this case. Keep in mind that all of this stems from a personal decision by the mayor to attempt to falsely and unjustly seek a protective order from a citizen, that the only thing that she did was she walked out on her balcony, observed an officer on duty dining with the mayor, and she snapped a photograph. And that was enough to put into motion the mayor going to court and trying to send a message to the picture taker, the photographer, Ambro, and anyone else, that if you do this, I'm going to drag you to court and there'll be a consequence. This has backfired on her, but the people paying the price are the taxpayers of the city of New Orleans.
The webs we weave. Unbelievable.
Right.
Rafi Goyeneche, as always, we appreciate your time, your insight. Thank you for joining us today. Have a great weekend.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. That's Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We will be right back after the break. We'll visit with Trip Rabelais, director of Lafreniere Park. Trunk or treat this weekend. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real, we're transparent, we're having a hell of a good time with it, and we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.